Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast all about books. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and for today on The Stacks Book Club, we're talking about The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz with celebrity trainer Alec Penix. To get to know Alec a little better, go to last week's episode where we talk about his new book, Seven Sundays, his love of self-help books, and why he reads. I also want to say Happy New Year to everybody. I am thrilled for all we have in store for 2019. Make sure you're going to our website, which is thestackspodcast.com, for recent articles about the best books that came out in 2018, our favorite reads of the year, and also a guide to helping you stick to your New Year's resolutions around reading. Check out the site and make sure you follow us over on Instagram at thestackspod. In case you missed it, the winner of the 2018 Battle of the Books was The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. I mean, you can't really complain. It's an amazing book written by one of the greatest writers to ever do it. If you haven't yet, check out our Stacks Book Club combo on The Bluest Eye with Renee from Book Girl Magic. The link is right there in your show notes. If you love The Stacks, consider joining The Stacks Pack. It's a group of folks who help support the work we do on this show in exchange for perks. We have a virtual book club that meets every other week. You get shout outs on the show and you get to find out about our guests in advance. Plus, you get to know that you're helping make a podcast that you love a reality. I want to give a shout out to our newest member of the Stacks Pack, Stacy. If you're interested, go to patreon.com/thestacks and contribute what you can. If a monthly subscription isn't your thing, you can always do one-time contributions by going to paypal.me/thestackspod. I've seen a lot of reading resolutions for 2019, and one of my favorites is the one where you say you want to read more nonfiction. Obviously, I love nonfiction, so that's not a goal for me, but if that's something that you're working towards, you should really check out My Mentor Book Club. They're a monthly subscription box of two nonfiction books that are new releases, and they come right to your door. Shipping is free and you can cancel at any time. Listeners of The Stacks get 50% off their first box by going to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. Our other sponsor here is Audible. They have all the audiobooks you could ever want. Plus, folks new to Audible get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thestacks. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this show. It goes a long way to helping us reach new audiences. It makes sure that you never miss an episode. And it helps us be able to reach out for more new and diverse guests. So if you haven't yet, take a moment to rate and review the show. It's super easy. Our most recent review came from Medved Dolly. Here's what they had to say. First off, Tracy is seriously hilarious, which thank you, and so quick on her feet when interviewing guests. She is so entertaining to listen to and has reinvigorated my love for reading. Secondly, the content and conversations about literature and the books they discuss are so great. It's safe to say I'm addicted and will be reading my way through all the books that they have discussed so I can listen to all the episodes. Thank you so much, Medved Dolly, and thank you guys for listening. And if you haven't yet, please take a moment to rate and review. Okay, now it's time for my conversation with celebrity trainer and author Alec Penix. Today, we're talking about the modern self-help classic, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. There's no spoilers this week, so you can listen and enjoy. Okay, here we go. All right, everybody, we are back again this week with our guest, fitness professional and author Alec Penix. We're talking this week about The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And if you're not familiar with the book, it's a self-help spiritual book that helps you to guide your life through making strong decisions about your language, your approach to the world, and more. So before we dive in, Alec, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
We're so excited you're here. So this book is a reread for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a first time read for me. Okay. I'm like one of the 15 people in the world who haven't actually read The Four Agreements. So this will be interesting to talk about kind of the book and how it's changed over time for you versus kind of my first reading.
Okay.
So what did you think of the book?
I really enjoyed the book, obviously, but I like the fact that it has this practical element to it, but mm-hmm. also spiritual. I like books like that where it has this bigger component to it, mm-hmm. but also this other component where you can apply to your life on a daily basis, mm. and that's what I like about this.
Yeah,
and it talks about the intro. I was like, I don't know. Do you remember reading the intro?
I do, kind of. It didn't stick with me.
It didn't either. It did not with me.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were saying you loved the intro.
That was like, what I'm saying is that was like the only part that was like, huh?
Yeah.
Like, I would have to read that over and over again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe somebody could help me with that. But but when it came to just to the four agreements,
yeah.
I thought that it was straight to the point.
Yeah.
Some self-help books will say, do this, but not in this situation and not when the weather is like that. So this right. can become a little bit, you're like, huh? Complex. Whereas it's just like, no, make your word impeccable. You know,
right.
And it's like,
right.
it's pretty simple.
Right.
And I like simple.
Yeah. So I had a kind of a similar but different take than you, which is I like the agreements as they are. And we'll tell you guys the agreements in a second if you didn't read. And if you didn't read, you can listen. There's not really going to be spoilers because this book doesn't really have spoilers. So yay. I liked the agreements. I thought the agreements were really good. I didn't love the author and I didn't love his tone. Mm. I kind of found I found him to be a little condescending or like a little patronizing.
Yeah.
And I also thought that he came from like a very male place where he simplified things that I think can be difficult for women or children or people of color navigating the world that I don't necessarily know that he took into account in writing the book. And so some of that stuff was hard for me to
yes,
navigate.
I can see actually you bringing that up. I can definitely see that. And the funny thing is my girlfriend actually recommended this book for me.
Yeah.
But I, looking back at that, I can see how he has sort of that little bit of that condescending to him.
Yeah.
Almost like aggressive.
Yeah.
You know?
It has a very, yeah. Like there's a lot of war language in it. There's a lot of like black versus white. And like, I like that the agreements are very clear, but sometimes I struggled kind of what you were saying, the opposite of what you were saying, which is like, sometimes I felt like he needed an addendum like this, except for not in this situation.
Interesting.
Let's kind of dive into the agreements and I'll tell you some of the things that like, where I was like, I'm not sure about this. So the first agreement is be impeccable with your words, which basically means ensure that you're using words that are empowering and affirming and, you know, don't gossip. Don't slander people. Choose your words carefully because they have power and they can lead to action and change and those types of things. Mm-hmm. And I kind of added on to it, like if you say you're going to be somewhere, you should be there.
Yeah.
Like following through with your
exactly.
word. Which I don't think he says exactly.
He doesn't actually.
But I do think that like that I'm going to give him credit for it.
Yeah. No, I like that. I think that it's also important that when you make plans with somebody that you stick to them, because then what you're doing is you're reaffirming it to yourself
right.
that your word does mean something.
Right.
If you constantly make, and LA is notorious for this.
Yes.
If you make plans with somebody and say no, and you do that, and you're just like, well, whatever, your word doesn't really mean anything. That person will take it like that as well. But
totally.
When it comes to the word, this impeccable word, I think that when people read it, they'll be like, well, duh, yeah, like I know this, don't gossip, don't do this and do that. And I think that that's why what makes this book a little bit unique is that it's just a reminder.
Right. I think it's so much harder to
definitely,
do.
This
definitely. One I think is maybe the hardest one, would be the hardest one for me. Because I feel like, I don't know, I grew up being self-deprecating. Like I think that when you like I like to be funny and one of the easiest ways to a laugh is to be self-deprecating, you
totally.
Know? So I feel like this one's hard for me to really, you know, and I've been working on that prior to reading the book, but reading the book reminded me like, if I want people to take me seriously, like I need to treat myself seriously. And like, I need to say that I'm a professional, you know, all these things, but it's hard.
Yeah. I think that we also need to don't go to extreme where we're changing who we are.
Right.
If that word that you're saying to yourself or you're being self-deprecating and it's bringing you, it's like, it's not bringing you into where you want to go in your
right.
life. And, but if it's sort of, if it's helping other people and other people are enjoying that moment, I think that there's a fine balance
right,
there.
Totally.
And I think where we need to be careful is what we say to other people.
Yeah.
When we are, and this is, I'm super sensitive when it comes to this because I was bullied in school, and I know that those words can affect you your whole life.
Right.
And some people don't even realize that they're carrying that identity with them through those words
right.
and they don't snap out of it.
Right.
And I could have been guilty of that. So I think it's important what you say to other people, right. Obviously as well with yourself. But
yeah, I agree. I think that words do have power. But like, so here's an example of something that I didn't love about this section. It's on page 28, and he talks about Hitler, and he talks about how Hitler.
Yeah, I was actually surprised about that.
So yeah, he talks about how Hitler like sows all these seeds of fear through mm-hmm. his words, and mm-hmm. he like goes on about it, and like you know, I follow the line that you're saying. Like Hitler got up there, he started saying bad things about Jewish people, about gay people, about the gypsies, mm-hmm. whatever, and then that led to action and legislation, and we all know what played out after that. And then in the next paragraph, he talks about a guy. He's like, or for example. A friend comes up to you and says, you look like someone who has the color of cancer. And then in a year, you're dead of cancer. And so for me, I'm like, wait, these things are not equal. This is like a total hypothetical, not backed up by science at all. Yeah. And then Hitler.
Yeah, I'm so like, who is this guy?
I'm like, what are we talking about? Like, if you want to, like, so sometimes that kind of stuff in the book really, like, took away from it for me because I thought the Hitler example was like, well, it was extreme. I understood the logic.
Right.
But like, someone saying, oh, you look like someone who has the color of someone who has cancer. I'm like, wait, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
So like those
actually
are the kind
say
of
that?
According to Don Miguel, they do. I never heard it, but.
I can see the Hitler part of it.
Yeah.
And what he means by that. But the analogy, the comparison of the two.
Like you're comparing two really different things.
Yeah. Like I can see how you think that those two things would make you not believe it.
Right. It made me be like, this doesn't make sense.
Question it.
Yeah, totally.
You make me open up. Like you open me up to like a different like perspective. I mean,
yeah,
I like it, but you're what I like is that you're allowing me to see it in a different light.
Oh, good. That's so exciting
yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm pretty critical. That's part of my identity. and I don't mean that in a self-deprecating way. That's just who I am. And I think that like I said, the agreements are really good. It's more like the way that he does it that I think
he's done that. He did that a few times.
He does it a few times. I have other examples. Don't worry. And the other thing. So this is I read another book. It's called Good and Mad. It's by this woman named Rebecca Traister. She writes for The New Yorker, I want to say. And she's a very well-known feminist theorist. And she reports on feminism. And her book is called Good and Mad. And it's about the women's movement starting as far back as like Susan B. Anthony and how anger has been a really powerful tool for women to be able to lead to action. So whether it's getting the right to vote, whether it's what we saw in this most recent election where women were angry and they started organizing and now we have all these women going into Congress. And so in her book, she makes a point of the power and the strength and the ability of anger to get things done. Mm-hmm. And I found it really interesting reading this book when he calls anger poison so many times. Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting, these two different takes on an emotion or a feeling that I think is somewhere in between.
Yeah, I also believe that we have a hard time identifying the emotion correctly.
Right.
Sometimes we, like when we're, for instance, you're about to do something where like a job interview or something and you're feeling certain emotions, right?
Mm-hmm.
It may not be nerves. It actually may be excitement. You may mm-hmm. be excited that you're actually sitting in front of somebody and you can sell yourself in front of somebody. So it's a misinterpretation, I think, sometimes of those emotions that those emotions are, maybe it is anger. I'm not sure.
Right.
But how we can use those emotions and then transform them into positive.
Right. Exactly.
You know, if it's positive emotions.
Right.
Like if something personal happens to you, instead of being angry at that person, you can actually, I believe you can change that emotion saying, you know what? I'm allow this to propel me,
right.
Not in a vindictive way, but in a way that allows me to bring out the best in me.
Totally. I agree. I agree. I think that emotions can be, I mean, I have my boss always says feelings aren't facts, which is really nice when you're crying, but you know,
yeah.
It's like, thank you for that nice hug that you gave me with your words. But he's right in the sense that like you can turn your feelings are your feelings, but they're not transferable. Like what I'm feeling might not be what you're feeling to the same thing, but you can turn your feelings into action.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like that in the Traister book in Good and Mad, that's what she's talking about. And
yes.
In this book, Calling Anger Poison, I'm like, I just finished this book where she talks about how powerful anger is and how empowering it is. So I found that to be kind of an interesting take on it, especially for women, because we're always told like, don't be angry or like she's shrill or she's yelling. So it was interesting to kind of like read it with that lens.
Right. It's it's just a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about emotions, because yeah. they are such a blessing yeah. for us. And that's what makes us human, is that we right. do. But we can allow emotions, good or bad, like to direct right. us in our lives.
Right.
They're like action signals. And, right. and so it's just depending on how you want to utilize them.
Right.
And I love how she, what was her name?
Her name is Rebecca Traister.
Rebecca Traister. Yeah. I love how she said that and yeah. how that, it's like your jet fuel.
Right, totally.
We get this emotion for us to actually, we can either better the world or we can make right. it worse.
Yeah, and like, of course, really deep-seated anger that you don't deal with can be very problematic. But I think the same is true for like, not joy necessarily, but like people who are always trying to be happy, you yeah. know, like always smiling, even when things are really bad. It's like, you need to deal with that too. Like yeah, there's yeah, something yeah. more there.
Yeah.
And so I think I understand that that's kind of his point more so, mm. but it was interesting because he kept singling out anger and I kept thinking, yeah, but anger can be really great. Like you can feel you can yeah. be really angry and like go have like the best workout of your life
yes,
and like
yes.
feel like free,
yes,
you know, and like that fueled you. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I also wondered, what do you think about how you can use your words impeccably when it comes to someone that's like harmed you or someone that you feel like has done like an injustice? Like how do you think that he would say that we should respond to that kind of stuff?
I think that when it comes to someone, I mean, that's hard for, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it's hard for me.
It's hard.
It is. And that, I think that's what he's talking about, is in terms of, I think it's moments like that where we see where we are, if
right.
that makes sense,
right.
where we are in this process.
Right.
If something, if someone says something to you that is mean or whatever, what you're going to want to respond in a way
right.
that is not impeccable with your words.
Right. But there must be a way to be impeccable with your words without just being like, you hurt me and I love you, right? Like there's a way to say what you need to say
well,
to someone.
I think that he also refers in this book about being clear with your intentions and your communication. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a moment where it's okay to stand up to yourself and say that it's not okay that you talk to me like that.
Right.
And then allow that to and then move on. You
right.
know, but in not, rather than taking it personally.
Which is the next one.
I'm sorry.
Perfect.
I'm getting
no,
ahead
perfect
of myself.
Transition. Yeah. I feel like we're like right there.
Yeah. It's not like this thing where you say that person like, oh, no, don't worry about it. It's or whatever. Like, or you hurt me. Like, or I don't know. Like, but the thing is I think that when you listen to how it makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And you let that person know in a respectful way
right.
that it is not okay that you talk to me like that or whatever, however you would want to respond
right.
to it. But when you stand up for yourself, that's, I think, also being impeccable with your word.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's good.
Okay.
'Cause I think for me, like sometimes I am very emotional. I can be very emotional. And one of the things that I've started doing, which I think is part of being impeccable with my words, is if I know I have to have a difficult conversation, I'll actually take notes for myself. Like, mm-hmm. what are the things that I want to make sure that I get out, and I'll write it down.
Mm-hmm.
Or I had a boss once who told me, like, if I ever had to send an angry email, I should write it all
yes.
out and send it to her, and that she would edit it for me and like help me. But then getting it back and seeing like how she thought I could be impeccable with my words, like
mm-hmm.
I feel like that was really helpful too.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that there's something like, not just verbal words, but also maybe to the writing mm-hmm. of the word for yourself, if that helps you to get it out and then to like look at it and read it back in.
Yeah, sort of cleansing yourself
yeah.
in a way. And like getting sort of that emotion out. And then, so when you're acting, when you're responding back from that place of hurt, you're not going to probably respond from the best
right.
state.
Right. Which right. is the next one, which is yeah. don't take anything personal.
Right. Right.
Which
I
is what he would say. This one's hard. I mean, they're all hard. Well, I don't know. The third one isn't as hard for me. This one is pretty hard too. Don't take anything personal, which is basically like understanding that everyone in the world is acting in their own best self-interest, and mm-hmm. that if someone says something terrible to you, it's because they feel terrible about themselves in that way, or maybe that there's some jealousy, or if, you know, someone cuts you off on the freeway, it's
You're
like, 'cause
right.
they're running late. They're not like trying to get an accident with you,
right.
you know, and like kind of.
So what do you feel about this?
Well, I think it's hard. I think because everyone's putting themselves first, you then kind of feel like, oh, well, if this person did that, they obviously knew that this was going to make me mad. And like, it's really easy to put more on interactions.
That. Yeah. When you look at it, that perspective, though, regardless of if that person is intentional or not, you still can have an understanding that that person is coming to you, and it's a lot of people aren't their behaviors.
Right.
We're much more than that. And seeing somebody as much more than that is, can be a hard thing to do at times.
Right.
Yeah. There's a lesson in that we can teach ourselves, is that to see somebody beyond, even in the, because if we can see somebody in that moment, then it'll be much easier to see somebody when they're good. Right.
Right.
It's like, it's, I think though, taking that step back and understanding the whole sphere of the issue at hand can, I think, really help you then react in a more positive manner.
Yeah. I think so too. So the question that came up for me in this one, just in thinking about it, is kind of, how much should we take personally that isn't our own stuff? You know, like let's say something terrible happens in the world. It's like, how can we be inspired to engage with that? Like, to take it on as our own for people who can't fight back. You know what I mean? And I don't know if that is really taking it personally so much, but like making things personal so that you have a reason to feel motivated to do it, you know?
Do you believe that we could be in a position where what people say to us, like, doesn't filter in and soak into us?
Do I believe that for anyone, or do I believe that for myself?
For yourself.
I mean, probably not for me. I'm very emotional. Yeah.
And it's not even about, it's not even about like just disregarding your emotions.
Right. Well, I'm a Cancer, so I feel a lot of things. Like, I feel like I'm very, this is very LA of me also, which I'm sure for you, you're like, sure, she's a Cancer, I get it.
But
you guys at home are like, I have no idea.
Educate me on this, because
I'm... Okay, well, it's a water sign, and like, we're very home and nurture, and so I feel like I'm like, you know, I always have people over my house, I'm always hosting, but also it's a crab, so I have bad attitude sometimes. I can snap on you. So for me, I think it's something good for me to work on, because I do think, like, especially in my job when I'm teaching fitness or with this podcast, I've had people send me like really mean messages, but they think they're being nice. And I'm like, this is so horrible. Like, I can't believe you'd
send
me
an example.
I'm going to give you an example, but I'm going to change it because I don't want people to know.
Okay.
But for example, someone once sent me a message about my speaking, and they kind of were like, you know, she always says this thing and she always does this thing. And I'm just, and I'm telling you this because I wanted you to have this feedback, but it was like a little bit more hurtful than that. And like, I don't think of this show as becoming a public figure, but I guess it kind of is. And like, I should expect it. But like that kind of thing I took personally at first. And then I was like, you know what? This person thinks that they're giving me helpful feedback, and I should just appreciate that they think that and take the feedback and like let everything else go. But I had, at first, it really made me upset. Like, I was like, oh my God, this person hates me.
Right.
And they had said other really nice things about the show. Mm-hmm. But for me, I saw the nice things and I was like, that's great. And then like they wrote like, but, and I was like, oh God, oh no, what's coming? Why do they hate me?
Miguel would say that they are jealous.
Sure.
But do you know that they were trying to be nice?
They said they were trying to be nice. I don't know. So I'm not going to make an assumption, number three, but I'm going to take them at their word. I, my response was, thank you for pointing that out and thank you for listening. And, you know, we all have things. Like, you know, there's not much more I can do. But, you know, to not take things personal is hard. I think, you know, it takes a really conscious effort in the moment.
Yeah. One of the things that I deal with is that when people give me advice that I don't even really know.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Like, if you want to help me, that's fine. But it's just when you don't have that personal connection with them, and then they sort of step into that like intimate place.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's hard. And yes, being having your own podcast and taking a step into that realm, you are going to get those types of feedback every now and then. But the thing I always look at it when it comes to that is that there are more people that you're helping and that are benefiting from this than the very few that are. Maybe she is jealous. Maybe she wish she could do what you're doing.
Or he, sorry.
do not want to make assumptions.
No.
But you have to think, put that into context, but that you are, you know, but it's a moment. I think I look at those as a moment for you to step up to the plate.
Right. I mean, I think that I actually got the message while I was reading this, and I was like in the first section, I hadn't gotten to do things personally. And then I was like, okay, I'm not going to take that message personally. So for me, like, I guess, tell me this for you. you can intellectually understand don't take things personally, but how do you actually in the moment for you turn away from that impulse to be like, this is the worst thing. Like this person hates me or this person's out to get me.
I'm not saying that I've perfected it by any means.
No, I'm just curious, like what works for you.
The first thing is that I'm aware of it. Yeah. I'm aware of what I'm feeling. And I'm also trying to understand the situation to the best of my ability.
Sure.
I'm trying to see it more outside of my emotions, because if my emotions are directing me into like this tunnel vision, I'm feeding off that anger, right? Or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And so you can't see the whole spectrum.
Right.
And that's I think when it comes to me, that is my biggest issue. But people think probably I'm crazy, but I have one of the blessings that I had from the learning disability and how that sort of, because of that, I went into sports and into working out. So I've always learned how to condition my body.
Sure.
I'm applying that same method to my mind, to my brain, in saying like, okay, I'm not disregarding emotions here. I am understanding them. And I understand what's going on here, but I want to use that emotion in a positive way, however that may be. And so I want to condition myself to maybe not control it, but to access it in a way that I can use it for my advantage.
Do you have any like tips, like, I don't know, take a deep breath and count to five, or like things that work for you in the moment when you feel yourself like maybe taking something personally, or you feel like something might like... For someone who's trying to kind of apply these things like early on, do you have any tips like that?
Yeah, speaking things out loud, and if you have a sense of anger, get it out. Feel it for a second, but don't let it control you where it dictates the rest of your day.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out of you, and then allow, then you're all right, good, I can go. Or go exercise, get it out of you that way. You need to find ways to release that. Go for a walk. Things in that manner. I vocalize things to myself sometimes, or even have people in my life where I can say that understand that I am not just like this trainer who is like trying to be there for everyone, that I can have people that can confide into and say, listen, this is what I'm feeling. Give me some advice. Like some people I can turn to right now, you know? And so there are little things like that I do on a daily basis. And just knowing too, like I can even pick up a book to a certain chapter or whatever that talks about mental focus, you know, and directing that in a positive way. There are YouTube channels and stuff that I can listen to, or motivational things that help me, that empower me to get me out of that state. Because I think what most of us don't realize is that when we feel these emotions, that we allow ourselves to stay in there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us stay in there for years, you know? And so I believe that we have the capability to snap out of anything fast.
Yeah.
If we apply utilize our body and our mind in a way that's powerful.
Right.
And I think when you do that, you start seeing like, wow, like I am a powerful person. I don't have to take these things personally. Right.
And I guess you saying this just made me think like there are also people who can help you, like therapists.
Yes.
Like there are people whose job it is to help you get through moments, or your trainer.
Yeah.
You know, but there are people who devote their whole lives to these kind of things. So like if you're someone who's had a lot of trauma or not, but are having a hard time opening up, like there are people that can help you, and there are places where you can get it for free if like cost is prohibitive, because I know that like therapy is a luxury of the middle and upper middle classes and the wealthy. So
And to add on to that, I was just talking to somebody the other day that and we were talking about therapy, and I've been to therapy, and I've had to go through my own trauma, and it helped me in a lot of ways. But where I've experienced the most empowerment was having certain rituals that I do every single day. And that's what we're talking about earlier, is about how reading
in the mornings
and then meditation the people always ask me, so when did you really start stepping into this person that I see now? And not to say like I'm like this amazing person, I have my issues, but in a way where we were talking to each other. And I just said, you know what, as simple as this may be, once I started making it a ritual every single day where I started applying reading and meditation to my, you know, also paying attention to what I bring into my mind. That's why it's hard for me to like watch certain things and mm-hmm. because I want to have a pure mind. Yeah. And it sounds silly, but something like that can get me off track. So right. by having those rituals every day, it really does. It's like a therapy session every day, because like you said, some of us can only go once a month or right. whatever. And we're almost sort of waiting for them to empower us, whereas we can also utilize them to help right, us get there faster. But we have to realize that we are our empowerment, that we have to apply that every day right. to really step into it.
Right. It's interesting because in the book, he talks about the first agreement as being like, he kind of says it's like the most important one, or like once you get that one, the rest will be a lot easier. Mm-hmm. But I think for me personally, the taking things personal is maybe my like gateway agreement. I think that if I could let go of that more, like if I could find ways to like work on myself and self-care and all these things, to me, that's the one that I feel like was like the most, gave me the most anxiety. Like, I don't know if I could do that, you know? So I think it's interesting for him. Clearly the words one is the one for him.
Yeah. It's everyone is different.
Yeah. Maybe it's because he's a writer.
Yeah. And he probably also understands something that you're right. I read that and I was like, interesting. Like, I wonder what he means by that. Right. Maybe he felt something, you know, like sometimes right. you have like a spiritual awakening,
right.
something unlocks within you mm-hmm. and it just clicks. Mm-hmm. He may have found that click moment when it came to being impeccable right. with his word.
Well, I wonder, you do a lot of motivational speaking to people when you're training them, and I do the same when I'm teaching class. So I wonder if that's something that feels more second nature to us because we understand how powerful words can be in a situation, like
absolutely.
How saying the right thing to the right person in the right moment can get them to do that last sit up or whatever it is, yeah. right? Like, so maybe that's just something that we understand
yeah.
more inherently, because we do use our words every day and we are interacting with people every day, and we can see how powerful words are, like just
right
in the exact moment. Like yeah. you tell someone, you know, you have one more push, mm-hmm. like you can either do it or you cannot do it,
you're right.
but you're here.
Yeah.
So like, let's go,
yeah.
you know, and like that can work.
Yes. And it comes back to what you were saying is like some of us are more natural. And I think for me, it's because of my experiences during grade school.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very sensitive thing for me. Mm-hmm. And I realize what words did to me. And
right.
so in turn, I want to empower people through my words.
Right. Okay. So we're going to go to the third agreement, which I think for me is the easiest agreement.
Okay.
Which is don't make assumptions. I think that's pretty straightforward. But in case you want a little more background, basically means communicating what you want and what you need. And when you don't know, asking.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm very inquisitive. I always have been. I have no problem with a follow-up question. Right. Obviously, I'm interviewing people about books now in my life, so right. I love a question. Mm-hmm. So for me, I thought it was really easy, but he did bring up some interesting points about relationships. Like, for example, you shouldn't have to change for someone for love, either friendly or
that.
Romantic.
That was one of my favorite parts of this whole book,
yeah,
by the way.
I agree. I think it's really powerful to realize, sure, you can change little things. Like, you know, when I moved in with my husband, it was like, you need to put the toilet seat down. Like, that's something you're going to have to change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I asked for it.
But that's so surface-based.
But that's so surface. Like, this is talking about you are who you are and you're creating the person that you want to be. And that if someone, you know, if you've communicated the things that you need to your partner or your friend or your parent, and they're unable to give you back what you need after you've communicated it, which is the important part.
Yes.
You can't just assume that everyone gets it.
Right.
Then you know that you need to make some changes in those relationships.
Exactly.
And you talk about that a little bit in Seven Sundays. You talk about how people will get on you if you're like, oh, I'm not eating right now. And that kind of like, if those people in your world don't appreciate the transformation that you're trying to make for yourself, mm-hmm. that maybe those aren't the right people for you in this moment. So it's kind of something I noticed that
yeah.
in reading your book, that was similar to the four agreements. I don't know if that influenced you at all, but I did notice it.
for instance, my girlfriend right now, that I think the reason why I like this part is because I think I finally found somebody that I can be free.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reservations. There's no ulterior motives. It's just freeing, and I can be free with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not finding myself saying, you know, do this different, do that differently. With her, she's always been into running and in working out, but now she's been sort of coming along with me on my journey, and we're doing it together. Mm-hmm. There are times where she doesn't have time, or she doesn't feel right in the morning. And it's not like, oh, you're failing. You know, I understand that I've been doing this my whole life.
Right.
Everyone has their own journey and they go at their own pace. Mm-hmm. And so it's just about being, I don't know if this is really answering your question. I'm just going off a tangent. It's mm-hmm. really about allowing that person to be them, mm-hmm. themselves, and also being the best influence that you can possibly be.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And like, it goes for romantic relationships. It seems like kind of the obvious one, but I think it also goes for like your coworkers and like your friends for sure. I mean, I know I had a friendship that I had it since college, and this person was talking about me behind my back to our friends. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, whatever, it's fine, whatever. And I finally was like, you know what, this actually isn't okay.
Right.
And I, you know, called her up and we had a whole conversation, and she couldn't hear it and she couldn't understand like why I was upset, and it just wasn't sinking in. And so I was like, you know what? We actually don't have to be friends. Like, that's okay.
Right.
Like, our relationship was our relationship for how long it was. And now, like, it's okay to walk away from that. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, maybe in 10 years, if we reconnect and you've changed in a way that I feel like works for the ways that I've changed, like, great. Kind of don't take it personal.
Right.
Like, understand that you need what you need. And if people aren't able to provide what you need in your world in that moment, that it's okay to like part ways.
It's totally okay. And that's self-love.
Yeah.
And I think that's also being impeccable with your word. You're communicating how you feel, and communication reveals everything. Mm-hmm. And whatever happens after that is meant to happen. And if that's, like you said, it takes 10 years for you guys to sort of, you know,
reconnect or not,
then it's fine. But you have enough love for yourself where you're going to tell them how you feel in a respectful way. You're not being like hurtful towards it, but you're saying,
well, it got a little contentious.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean,
I might've could have been a little more impeccable with my word, but I hadn't read the book yet.
Yes. Regardless, it's a journey and we're all working on it. Right.
Sure.
But I think that you got your point across in terms of that wasn't okay.
Right.
And, but through that, sometimes when we communicate, I think we're afraid that because we're afraid we're going to lose that person.
Right. You have to be okay with losing the person.
And I know that's harder said than done, but that's why it's so important.
Yeah.
Important to create those habits to empower yourself.
Totally.
To know that that person, and having that faith and that trust that that person is going to come along. If it's a romantic, if it's for business, if it's just for a friendship, mm-hmm. just being patient. And I believe that where there's a season for everything.
And just so that people don't think that I think that I'm perfect, that was really hard to have that conversation with my friend.
Oh, I guarantee.
Like, it was a nightmare, and it went on for too long, and I had other friends involved, and like it wasn't perfect. But I'm so much happier now in my life, like years later.
Yeah.
So for those of you who have to have these difficult conversations, or are feeling like maybe inspired or excited about conversations you're gonna have because you've read the book, it's not easy. Like, it's kind of horrible. And I think that's part of it. It's easier to make an assumption and just kind of move on than it is to actually deal with the answer that, you know, like in your heart, like, I have to break up with my boyfriend, or, you know, whatever it is.
But making those assumptions are toxic.
Yeah.
Because
totally.
What you do is you sit in it, you marinate in it.
Yeah.
And think
you
about
kinda
it.
Trap yourself. Yeah,
you over and over and over again. And you're taking up space, energy within you to be productive and doing things that you want to do. And but yes, you're right, losing that person, your boyfriend, is that would be extreme. It's hard, right?
Hard.
But also knowing that the next phase is even better,
right?
And that you're gonna open up space for somebody new,
right?
That's gonna appreciate you.
Yeah. So okay, so this is another one where I had kind of like a, all right, Don Miguel Ruiz, this is one that I'm not super wild about in this section. I think maybe he talked about it in the prologue, but he talks about you only accept the amount of abuse from other people that you give to yourself, which I understand that. But I also, like, the first thing I thought about is, like, what about kids who are getting abused by their parents? Like, those are kids. And, like, that stuff lives with you forever. You talked about being bullied and that sticking with you. And that's, you know, can be so traumatic. And, of course, you'll carry that with you. But children who are, you know, in abusive family situations or whatever, or maybe the teacher is really abusive, like, I don't know that those kids are welcoming that in. So that was a moment where I was kind of like, I feel like there's he needs to go deeper on this.
That's the perfect point right there. He needs to go deeper. And
some of it's so surface in the book that it's like, right. But if you're someone who was traumatized, like, you know, you had an abusive family member for years and years, it's not just so simple as being like, I welcomed that in and now I'm taking responsibility for it. It's like, no, you were definitely a victim and it's okay to have been a victim. And I wish that he gave more empowering words for people who are struggling on a much deeper level with things that have been, you know, done to them in their youth. Or he talks about, you know, like, you won't suffer anymore if you follow these things. And I'm like, well, what about people who were, you know, are at the border of this country and getting tear gassed? And like, there's so much bad in the world that I think that some of this book doesn't engage with people who have like real totally. Serious trauma and are living through, you know, back to the Hitler thing. Like if you're in the Holocaust, if you're in one of those concentration camps, like, I don't know if it's just so simple to like, I'm not going to make an assumption today. Right. Like there's so much
deeper
crap, you know?
Yeah, I mean it's a really good thought, and when you look at it, I think that it does apply to certain people that can pick up this book and read it, right?
Right.
I mean,
I'm sure there's things people can get out of it, but yeah. I do think like kind of saying you invite the amount of abuse that you are willing to accept for yourself puts a lot of blame on people who are real life victims of things that aren't in their control. Is kind of what I'm saying more succinctly.
Yeah. It's true. And it's going to be more difficult for like someone to pick up this book that has been abused, like rather than somebody who has been living a sort of a normal life and,
right.
and grew up in a normal family. And so they're not going to have that same relationship when he says that.
Right.
That
well, I think that could
him.
Be triggering. Like, I don't know if I've been lucky in my life to not have any real major trauma like that. And I feel like if I had and someone wrote a book and was like, well, you take on what you're willing to accept. It's kind of like, I don't know, pal, you're blaming me for this. Like, I felt icky to me because I know that so many men and women of all, you know, gender identities and ages and sexualities have experienced real abuse from the outside. And I'm not into victim shaming.
I think the moral of this whole thing for you is it's just not that simple. That it is more complex. And
he comes at it from such a male privilege place to me that I just feel like there are people who really, really struggle in this world for things that are outside their control. And that to simplify it and say that they've welcomed some of it is just like icky to me.
Yeah, and I can actually see that. And
yeah.
What you, like that male privileged role. I can see it, you know, and I've been lucky enough. I'm a white male. I grew up in a small town in Michigan, and I had, for the most part, it's like I haven't really dealt with some of those other deeper issues that we deal with on a regular basis.
Right.
So can I really relate to them on that level? Probably not.
Right. I mean, I don't think I can either, but I just think that there are people, I know there are people who have real demons that they battle with. And that's kind of my point. Like not to make you or I or anyone who's had like a relatively nice life.
Yeah.
Not without struggle, but you know, not anything so major. I think for those of us to also think like, sure, it's easy to be impeccable with your words or tell your friend you don't want to be friends with them. But when that friend is actually like your uncle who was doing inappropriate things with you, like that's a whole bigger thing.
Right.
And it's not your fault.
What I believe is that we each of us has a choice in what we do with our life. And, and some are going to be harder than others. And for me personally, I'm like, this is my life. And I want to be the best person I can be, not for my own consumption, but to help the world, to make the world a better place, regardless of my background and how I grew up. I just want to give in a way that increases the positivity into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I created a book like Seven Sundays.
Right.
That, regardless, I had my own thing I'm dealing with. Do you think it's easy for me to stand in front of you right now and you're this adamant book reader and super articulate and everything, and here I am still dealing with my stuff, but instead I still choose to express myself even though I deal mentally every single day that I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, and all these things. I realize that the more I step into my freedom, the more I'll be able to experience that side more than this other side.
Totally, I agree. I think this book is really great for people who are like on their journey, but I just wonder like how it would feel if you were had been victimized in a way, you know? Okay, so the last one is always do your best. And I like this one. I'm sure you do too. We're fitness people. We're always trying to get people to do the best they can possibly do. But what I loved most about this one was that he says it's not just like, because basically what he's saying is that you do your best and you know that you've done your best, and then you can't be upset if it didn't work or it does work. You can't take it personal either way. You do your best, and sometimes you'll succeed and sometimes you'll fail. But what I liked about this one was that he also talks about you can't just do your best. And if you're a total novice and you like you're playing the piano and you get up there and you've never practiced and you do your best and your concert's terrible and be like, I did my best.
Yeah.
He's like, you still have to practice.
Yes.
You still have to do the work.
Yes.
You have to not only do your best when it comes to the moment, but you also have to do your best in your practicing and your research and your learning and your listening, that that's part of the growing process. So
right.
I really liked yes. that one for that reason.
This one was actually my favorite as well because of the season that I'm in. Not too long ago, I was thinking about that. Like I finally came into this place of peace where I was like, oh, I'm doing my best.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of what happens, I did my best.
Right.
And that's what you call acceptance. And that
right.
feels fantastic.
Really good.
No matter what the outcome is. And what it also did is it enlightened me on mistakes or failures or whatever you want to talk. I have a different relationship with that anymore. It's not this, I make a mistake, oh, I'm the worst person ever, and you get hard on yourself, you start
right.
shaming yourself. It's like, oh no, like what did I learn? Okay, let's get better.
Let's do better.
Yeah.
Right.
And that has been the biggest change, because I was always so hard on myself.
Right.
And so this walk is about walking into that freedom of like, it's okay. You know, it's
yeah.
okay to fall short sometimes,
right.
but
if you know that you did your best,
you did your best,
right.
you know,
then you can't be angry with yourself. Like you are who you are.
The most powerful thing that I've learned through this whole thing is having a beautiful relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
The same way you would treat your mom, mm-hmm. like treat yourself that way. You know,
right. well, if you like your mom.
Or your best friend or whoever,
whoever
you know
like.
What I mean?
Someone that you like,
you know what I mean? Like it, someone who you love unconditionally,
right.
like, and like love yourself that way.
Right.
And
totally.
It sounds silly, but it's simple. And it that's really allowed me to have this introspection.
I feel like that's the essence of the book.
Yes. Yeah. It's like breaking off all these belief systems that like culturally that we attach to, and breaking free from that and just sort of coming in to your unlimited potential. He talks about expressing yourself freely
mm-hmm.
in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I think that is where creativity is, and you probably, you know, doing this podcast is
mm-hmm.
where this all comes from you.
Totally.
So I like that aspect of it.
I totally agree with you. That's a pretty good segue.
Okay.
So you already said this one was your favorite, and I think my favorite was don't make assumptions. What about, can you think of any agreements that you would add or that might be, I'll go first if you want a second to think. So one that I would really love to see. So I actually wrote down a few. One was search for joy, because I feel like some of these are a little bit negative, like don't make assumptions, like don't do this. So I feel like finding ways to search for joy in moments. And another one that I thought would be give others the benefit of the doubt, but once they show you who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
And then my last one was just be intentional, which I feel like kind of fits into the other ones, but
mm-hmm.
like saying that expressly, like in everything that you do,
mm-hmm.
being intentional, like making choices, understanding that your actions, like that you can make sense of your actions before you act, mm-hmm. that you can like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna be here. I'm gonna, you know.
Yeah. Like that, that personal power.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be one.
Yeah.
That personal power. It's, I think that empowers the self-love, the understanding of that you are, and I think he talks about this, that you are created in the image of God and whatever that may
yeah.
mean for people. But I think that what that does is it allows you to have that foundation, that source to go to, like, oh, wait, like even in all this chaos, like I have to remember that this thing is like, we are all like, we're human here, and that we are all beautiful, and we have something to offer. And I know it sounds kind of corny,
right?
But it's something to come to go back to when in dire need, when
right.
when you're looking for that, like that thing to turn to, and you're like, gosh, man, like I need some inspiration here. But
right.
I'm really about, if you were to add one, like that personal power, that self-love,
mm-hmm.
any of that, just to remember that you're loved and you're chosen.
No, I agree. I think like finding the self-love. I did, of course, struggle a little bit with the God part of the book, just because I think that he says that you don't have to have religion, but he keeps circling back to the God part. So I found that interesting. Like, I kind of felt like in the beginning he was like, this is for everybody. And if it's God or if it's light or whatever, but then he like circles back. And I do find that a lot in self-help books where it's like, this is for everybody, but we're going to talk about God. Yeah. And like, there are people who don't believe in God, you know? And like, I'm like, so what do you say to those people? But you know,
with my book, Seven Sundays, I really believe that I'll fall into sort of the same issues with people if they never heard me talk or they don't know who I am. Even with that, they'll still be like reading the book. They're like, I just look this God, like I can't, this is too much for me. And that's, listen, that's okay. You know, and regardless, like I'm here just like with a pure heart and I want people to understand that, but you know, some things aren't just right now aren't meant for like certain people to come in to pick up my book. You know, it's just the way it is.
Right. And I think like for me, someone who's not Christian, as I said before last week, for your book, like I read it and then some parts, like when it would get to like the concede and the honor, like that just wasn't so much for me. Right. So I would like look at it, but I didn't really like internalize it because that's not really my belief system. And I just moved forward to offering and it worked great for me.
Right.
You know, like I just was like, this isn't, you know, this part wasn't for me. Like,
right.
I'm a little too agnostic for like the Bible verse, but if it works for you, great. And if not, like carry on.
Yeah.
Don't take it personal.
Then you go to sleep, exercise and nutrition, you know, and
exactly.
So you apply certain things that you want. Right. And then the other stuff that you don't have to.
Right. I mean,
but at the same time, there are going to be books out there that you're going to like, and there's going to be books out there that you're not going to like.
Of course. And I think like, I just wondered because I feel like so many self-help books, like your book is unapologetically about a relationship with God. And I felt like this book was trying to say, oh, it's not about God, but then it kept bringing it up. And if he would have just said it's about God, then I could have said, okay, this book's about God. Let me see how I can adapt it for myself. Mm-hmm. So I feel like what you've done that's really nice is you said like this book does center Christianity and it does center God.
It's what worked for me.
And that's what worked for me. And this is my book and my story. Mm-hmm. And the reader can then approach it with that full understanding.
Exactly.
And so I think that that's different. Because like, of course, if you are Jewish and you want to read a book about Judaism and fitness, like, great, enjoy it.
Right.
Or if you're atheist or agnostic or whatever it is, I just sometimes get like, I'm like, why are you trying to trick me?
I understand that. It's you're being manipulated.
Exactly. It's just a little bit different. But I don't feel that way about your book at all. I feel like your book is, well, I mean, the first sentence of your book is like, this came from my journey with God.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like literally the first sentence is like, hi, I'm Alex. And this book is about my relationship with Jesus. And you're like, great, here we are. Like, I know what I'm getting into.
Yep.
You know,
not hiding anything.
Exactly. Okay. Well, I think we're going to wind down. Here are the two things that we like to talk about here at the end, the title of the book and the cover of the book. So what did you think? And just in case you have your book in front of you. Yeah. So what did you think about both of those things?
I like the title, Four Agreements.
I think it's pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward, yeah. And that's what I think about the whole book. But it's pretty straightforward. And the cover is creative. When I look at this book, it catches my attention, regardless.
See, I'm so different. I think this book looks corny to me. Like, I'm just like not into the
drawing.
You
just don't like this book.
No, I'm not into the drawing. I actually really like the book. I just am not into the, like, it looks like a self-help book to me. Like, it looks like I'm going to learn something about the
world. It's very spiritual.
Yeah, it totally looks like that.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I'm like, okay, I get it.
But I don't know if you've, like, been able to learn this about me so far. I'm pretty corny and cliche.
Yeah, you're not corny, but you're into this stuff.
Yeah.
So like for me, I'm like always a little bit more skeptical.
Right.
Which is like why it's kind of fun to talk about this book with you, because I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Like someone who's super into this. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you think about this part? Yeah. Like explain this.
I can see what you're doing. You're really, you know, you want to see both sides of everything rather than just taking everything and just like saying this is truth rather than questioning it and saying, OK, let's dig into this a little bit deeper.
Right.
And I think that's healthy. I think that's good.
Yeah.
And I also think it's also important to allow yourself to be empowered if it's necessary.
Right.
As well.
And I think there's a lot here. That's just the way I always approach things. I'm always like, OK, let me think about what they're saying and what I agree with and what I don't agree with and then try to apply it. But, you know, that's just like, I don't know. Type A-ness, I don't know. Well, do you have anything else you want to say about this book?
Wow, I totally went into this book on such a deeper level, and I have you to appreciate for that.
Yay, I'm so glad.
No, this has been a fun journey.
Thank you so much for coming on. We're going to put links to everything we talked about today in the show notes. And of course, don't forget to pick up Alex's book, 7 Sundays. You can get it online. You can get it at your local bookstore or place an order. And thank you so much for being here, Alec.
Thank you for having me.
And we will see you all in the stacks. Thank you all so much for listening today, and thank you to Alec Penix for joining us. Don't forget to check out his book, 7 Sundays, wherever you get your books. For more from the Stacks, follow us on social media using the links in the show notes and see our articles and reviews on our website, which is thestackspodcast.com. To join the Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, like perks and the book club and more, go to patreon.com/thestacks and join the fun. Thank you to our sponsor, My Mentor Book Club. For 50% off your first box of 2 nonfiction hardcover books, go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. And thank you to Audible. To get your free 30-day trial and your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. I'll see you all in the stacks.